Thank you for joining us today on Positively Charged Biz. We are here to motivate, inspire, and support our listeners as they write their life stories. We are a proud founding member of the Real Disrupt Podcast Collaborative, and you can check out more awesome podcasts at realdisrupt.com. Hey everyone, I hope you are having a positive and productive day. On today's show, we have three guests who have come together to bring awareness and shine a light on dementia. Allow me to introduce you all first to David Serafine. He is the author of Before the Ashes Fall, the literary fictional story about redemption, forgiveness, and love between father and son that demonstrates a highly visual and heartbreaking journey beneath the cloud of Alzheimer's. The novel was drawn by many positive reviews, including award-winning book editor David Areva, who calls it inspirational and brilliantly conceived, a monumental achievement inspired by love. We also have the lovely Sarah Schwab. She is a writer, director, and producer, and she is the screenwriter of Before the Ashes Fall, as well as the director. She has directed and produced and co-wrote the feature film Life After You in January 2020. Her 2018 short film, A My Name Is, toured the festival circuit internationally and was awarded Best WNN Short Film and Buffalo International Film Festival. We also have Brian Long. He is the executive producer of Before the Ashes Fall, and he is the award-winning film producer and Obie award-winning theater producer. His upcoming films include A Stage of Twilight in Summer of 21, Before the Ashes Fall, January 2022, and A Cry Baby Bridge in September of 22. Okay, guys, let's dive right into this. David, on Positively Charged Biz, we like to start at the beginning. So please tell us, what inspired you to write the book Before the Ashes Fall?
So first off, Laura, thanks so much for having us on the show. Really appreciate that, and fantastic introduction, by the way. I appreciate that. So I think from my standpoint, it was one of those circumstances where our families touched by two different incidents of dementia themselves. So we had a grandfather, my wife's grandfather, as well as her mother, both being diagnosed with various diseases of dementia. So from that standpoint, it caused me to start basically writing or putting a structure of a story together. I utilized also some various components of my own life with my father and things of that nature. So from my perspective, I just thought it was an idea where I could bring a couple different parallel stories together. Obviously, the main focus for me is the overall dementia awareness with the story itself, but I thought there was also a connectivity to a redemptive and love aspect in my own history as well. So that's what started the whole story about 3 years ago.
Okay, so that was 3 years ago. You went through the process of writing the book. You've kind of opened up your heart and your mind to be able to share this story. So what was that pivotal moment where you were like, you know what, I need to do more? And you need to do more in multiple ways. One way is keep getting the message out for your book. The second thing is you needed to do more to create awareness. So take us through that journey.
I think that's a great question. And I think that one of the things that I was unaware of as the whole process started playing out, I'd heard the word dementia in my past. So everybody's heard dementia, but not necessarily maybe connected to it personally. I think that one of the things that kind of shed some light on the whole story for me was just how much effort is put into by the caretakers. And some of those folks are thrust into that role when they've got a full-time career, they've got kids, they've got spouses. And so from that standpoint, sort of watching how that unfolded in my own family and what my wife had to do from the moment that was diagnosed. The grandfather had passed late last year. So from that standpoint, you had a whole year's worth of a mother that was basically in a memory care facility at that point that then eventually got transferred to home. So you get to see various aspects of the disease progressing, various points of how much more investment that the caretaker has to give in that situation. The team-oriented effort by all the memory care practitioners that are out there to support this, but also along that same line, just some basic research of how many people are actually impacted by the diseases themselves. So dementia being a bucket of symptoms of things for diseases such as Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, or CTE, there are a number of diseases that fall within that. And I think that when you look at how fast that is growing over the next 25 years, you'll realize that it is truly the global epidemic or global pandemic that people really aren't speaking of right now. It's very, very quiet compared to other pandemics that are out there. So that's what pushed me into wanting to learn more and as far as the outreaches of this program.
Okay. So how did you get from book to then I want to take it to another level, which I think you started going in the direction of an actual play and then it pivoted into going into a movie direction, right?
Yeah. So I think that when the book came out, a lot of different people from a couple of people from Ireland and people from Chile, Brazil, many people in Asia, many people reached out and said that I had a spouse, a child, a relative, a grandfather that also had dementia. And so there was this initial connectivity globally. It really didn't stay in a specific lane as far as demographic, socioeconomic status or things like that. It was a very much a connecting piece. And so for me, based on understanding what the story was, I felt that it'd be something that really play well onto a stage. I think that when I first started reaching out to different people, Sarah being the primary person I reached out to, she actually read the story and she has such a skill set to learn how that's going to look when it's a finished product and how you'd have to change things throughout the course of the story. One of the things that we started to talk about was how challenging it might be to put something like that story on a stage versus where it adapt very well to a film. And then COVID came into the picture at that point. So that certainly helped kind of cement things in my own mind that, yeah, it makes sense to try to put this into a film. But that certainly came to where Sarah came into the picture.
Awesome. And that's a perfect transition to Sarah. Okay, Sarah, what was the first reaction when you read the book?
My first reaction was that this story has a heart and a soul and a pulse. And those are all things that attract me to any story, is that human element. How can I connect to these people, to this situation, to this narrative, even if I might not have personally lost anyone or known anyone with dementia? I can connect to the human element and I can connect to each and every single one of the characters that David has written about because he taps into basic human elements. The three words that we really discussed was redemption, forgiveness, and love. And these are all feelings that any human being, no matter what you have gone through in your life, you can connect to those feelings. And so when I read David's book, I was just instantly hooked. I felt his passion. I heard more about his mission, about bringing awareness, which I really believe in. And I thought this would be just a really supreme connection together to do this.
Yeah, and number one, you know, I want to call out the fact, you know, while we're together here, that it is, as you're speaking, I'm relating to you in multiple ways, but from a woman's standpoint, I can completely see that you're kind of looking at this approach in a way that's a little different than you might have necessarily done it from a male perspective. So I think you definitely have connected to this from a personal level, and you definitely have shown that emotion and connection. And I want to understand that, I know it takes us a little off course, but what has it been like being in your field from a woman perspective?
Well, I'll say, Laura, I have gotten very, very lucky being with my current tribe, getting into the theater industry before this. That's how Brian and I met. And just being surrounded by a group of people, men and women, who really believe in all voices being heard. And so my first experience on a film set was in 2016, and it was Karen Allen, who a lot of people know from Raiders of the Lost Ark and Animal House and Starman. It was her directorial debut, and Brian produced that short film called The Tree, A Rock, A Cloud, based on a Carson McCullough short story. And I was part of the production design team under the tutelage of Christy Zia, who is an Oscar-nominated production designer for Silence of the Lambs, Revolutionary Road, Goodfellas. So here I am, this first time on a film set ever, just kind of out of my depths, like starstruck, and just working with these two powerhouse women and an entire crew of people who are collaborating and just really believe in the story. And I was so galvanized and taken by it that I came off that shoot just knowing I need to do this. And so everything after that, I worked on every film shoot that I possibly could to know, I worked every single department that I possibly could to understand how the whole thing worked. And then I just wrote my own short story, A My Name Is, and Brian and I produced that together. We shot it in 2018, did the festival circuit in 2019, won a bunch of awards, which was really, really fantastic. So to be honest with you, to answer your question, I personally haven't felt affected by this, this male industry run industry world. That does not mean that that women do not have the same advantages of men. I think that there's lots of room for improvement, but I want to take the lessons that I've learned from women like Karen Allen and Christy Zia and all the other beautiful, strong women out there and keep pushing that forward and keep supporting women. And
I love everything that you just said, and you are 100% correct, because what you just said is that the lessons that you learned and the opportunities that they showed you, and the fact that you said, I'm all in, I'm going to learn everything from top to bottom, whatever it takes, you're then going to show that to the people behind you. And that is a glorious thing, regardless of gender, regardless of anything, you're going to show that. And that is a beautiful thing. So absolutely. All right. So now you read the book, you're connected to it. You have this, there's something here. You believe in the mission. What does it take to take that book and adapt it into where it would become a movie?
Mm-hmm. Well, David creates an array of characters, and he gave me a lot to work with. There are three main characters, and he actually personified dementia in a very creative and abstract way, which is it's interesting how that's going to play out on the screen. But I have my nice little neat set of rules and how to create a story and the right arc and when to hit certain beats. And I would say, David, you like to kind of color outside the lines, which I love. And so it's a cool collaboration between the two of us, because he'll go way out there and I kind of stay right here, and we both fire each other to move out of our comfort zones. So, we did three drafts of it. I read the book. I put my initial instincts out there for him to read. We had a conversation. Made appropriate edits that we both felt comfortable with, did a second draft, did the same thing, third draft, same thing. And even as we move down the line to production, David and I are going to be continuing to collaborate and just discuss the story, which is an evolving process.
Oh, that's great. Okay, Brian, let's loop you into this now. All right, so now for those of us not in your industry, please explain to us, what is an executive producer? How do you tie into this and explain kind of the behind the scenes for us that don't understand that?
Oh, man. Well, first of all, Laura, thank you for having us on. What a producer is going to do is take you from the beginning to the end as far as the process of producing film.
Okay.
You start with working on the script with the artist involved. You move into budgeting for the film. Eventually, you have to start to cast and find out who your lead actors are going to be. You have to eventually start to crew up and get the crew that you need for the film. You certainly have to raise the money. You eventually have to get into finding locations and where you're going to shoot the film. And then you continue on in the process by shooting it, going through the post-production process, and then getting it out in the world through festivals and through distribution. So the executive producer really works with the artist to shepherd through the entirety of the process from beginning to end.
Wow. Wow. Okay. So what did you see in this project that you said, wow, this is something that I want to make sure I shepherd through and get this out to the world?
Well, for me, it really starts with the script and the art of the script, the quality of the script. And Sarah, the first time I saw the script was, I believe it was after her final version that her and David had worked on. And, you know, I've worked with Sarah a number of times. I consider her to be one of the, not just developing and up-and-coming writers directors. I think she's already there, although her resume might not show that yet. But talent-wise, she's elite in my mind. When she showed me that script and I read the script, I had very little reacting to it in a way that I felt there was improvements needed. It was really good right off the top. The characters were great. The story moved. And there certainly was a message there about the world of dementia. And anytime you can do a film that is just a quality film and at the same time also has some sort of message to it or an outreach portion to it, those are the kind of films that I really enjoy producing, because it kind of ties in two things. It's great filmmaking and doing outreach for a particular topic or problem that we're kind of facing as human beings.
Awesome. Okay, David, let's go back to the beginning of what is dementia? Because I think we all have this thought in our mind, especially for people that maybe have not had a family member or someone close to them be affected by it. Give us, you know, an overview of what that encompasses.
So I'm not a medical practitioner. I've got no history in the medical field whatsoever. So when I'm talking about it, I'm talking about it from an observer's perspective and somebody that took that and then wrote a story based on that. So for me, it is I'm going to use the word, the quietest pandemic of my lifetime. It is something that slowly abrades the identity of an individual. I think the cruelness of this particular disease is something where, and I'm not comparing this to other diseases, simply speaking of this one, is if you're watching somebody that's written a story for 7 years, 7 years worth of a life that they put relationship into, their work product, everything that they've ever done, and that is slowly abraded month after month after month to the point where there's nothing left of the individual. Dementia to me is just, it steals identities. It just robs an identity until the end. And I think that the one thing that's challenging about it is, in certain circumstances, when you're watching this, you know, people are thrust into this situation of taking care for, in some cases, 3, 4, 5 years of their lives. So they're literally putting everything on hold for that caretaker role. And quite frankly, that's going to be exacerbated going forward. There aren't enough memory care practitioners that are out there to sustain or to support what's going to be coming down the road. There aren't enough right now. So from that standpoint, to me, it's an unknown, it's an insidious disease that creeps beneath the surface, both in the individual suffering from it, and certainly from a societal standpoint. One of the initial editors I reached out to for my book was in New York City. And this arguably is one of the most connected cities on the planet. Everybody in New York knows a lot of what's going on, right? And the initial discussion on this book was, well, you know, if you've got a silver alert, and I made that mention, and the person said, what are you talking about? I said, you've heard of a silver alert. And I actually had to explain what that was. And my point is something that is quite, you know, dementia impacts so many different people and so many different varieties that not knowing that in the most connected city in the world is frightening, is the way that I looked at that. So again, insidious. It abrades identities. It puts a lot of burden on caretakers that are not prepared to be a caretaker, that are not unsure how to provide for them. It's all of those things.
Yeah. And, you know, you had mentioned that this is something, you mentioned that this is a pandemic because of the number that will be there in 2050. So speak a little bit about that based on what you have researched.
Sure. So, and again, I'm not a medical practitioner, but from the standpoint of, again, dementia is a bucket of symptoms. So it's not the actual disease. So when you talk about dementia, you can speak of things, and this is that insidious nature. Again, you can speak of things like Parkinson's. You can speak of temporal frontal dementia. You can speak of Alzheimer's. You can speak of CTE. All of these things are bucketed in that same dementia category. So If you're looking right now and saying that there are roughly 50 million people worldwide that have dementia diseases, and you're looking at 150 million by the point of 2050, that's a problem. That's a tripling over the next, you know, what, 25, 27 years at this point. So that is an extreme financial burden. That's an extreme burden on the healthcare system. And that's, and the challenge of that again is the vast majority of films that have been out there, some of the programs that are, as far as the outreach, they're not necessarily focused entirely on the demographic most impacted. So the minority communities, those are the most impacted demographics of the disease itself. So I think from that standpoint, there's a lot of opportunity in the outreach programs as well.
Absolutely. Okay, so Sarah and Brian, how has COVID kind of put a little bit of a change in the plan of anything in terms of filming or doing anything having to do with your industry? Curious about that.
You want to take that, Brian?
Or would you? Yeah, I'll take it first. You want me to take it first and then you can fill in around me?
Sounds good.
Okay. Well, to be perfectly honest with you, you know, we were relatively lucky with how the COVID thing hit and when it hit for us.
Okay.
We were shooting a film in January, which we wrapped up the first week of February. And then we were doing the edit. Sarah was doing the edit all the way through the middle of March. Literally the day that she finished the edit was the day, you know, the shutdown really started to happen in New York City and everywhere else. The rest of the post-production process on our last film was that we were able to do it in isolation. We didn't, you know, the COVID stuff didn't really get in the way there. And we finished post-production on the film earlier in the month on September 1st. The next film that we're doing, which is the one right before we do Before the Ashes Fall, will be done this summer. What the world is going to be like in the summer, we don't know yet. What we've been doing is very much researching and understanding what the requirements are going to be on keeping a safe environment for your cast and crew. There certainly will be a financial implication to that with the testing and needing to have an expert on set. We're having to, you know, there's probably going to be some housing things we'll have to deal with there. But we're in a position where we understand what we're going to need to do. It's not deterring us at this point to push out the shoots further. To kind of wait out the COVID thing, because we just really don't know how long that's going to take. But we've done enough work to know when we shoot this coming summer, what it will take to shoot the film, yet maintain a safe and secure environment for the cast and crew. So like I said, we've been kind of lucky that we've kind of fit our last film in just before the pandemic hit. And the next one, hopefully, will take place after this pandemic really starts to become in the rearview mirror.
Great. And I'm glad you shared that, because that's certainly something that most were not sure, you know, of how you deal with that. So thank you for that. Okay. Hey, David, speaking of COVID, we've seen that there's obviously been changes in every aspect. And we see now that telehealth is something that is more common. How does that fit into what you've seen within the dementia aspects?
Yeah, I think from the standpoint of accessing certain communities that otherwise would not have been accessed before now, right, before COVID, even from that standpoint, I see a greater availability of accessibility with telehealth, all right? And so one of the things that I'm finding, again, having written the book and now starting to put some things out on LinkedIn, there are a number of telehealth researchers, pharma, doctors that all are saying, hey, when this is all said and done, we'd love to be a part of that outreach program. Mm-hmm. Telehealth playing a primary role, especially if you're talking about not being able to go physically to certain locations or having to limit the number of people that are available, that doesn't preclude one from saying, okay, let's organize something vis-a-vis telehealth, right, and you can access as many people as you'd like to access. But I think the biggest piece for me is, and this includes telehealth, the biggest piece for me is raising awareness of what one can do to mitigate the onset and impact of things such as Alzheimer's. Okay, so that's the primary thing. So whether it's a dietary issue, if you're talking about exercise, limiting alcohol intake, things like that, all of these things compound certain aspects of the impact of dementia, right? And so that's the type of food selection. So that's the type of things where if you're not getting that into certain demographics, they're going to exacerbate a condition that's underlying. And so for me, getting that awareness out there and having accessibility to the doctors that can talk about that, telehealth folks that can talk about that, memory care practitioners that have dealt with that and managed those things over the course of their career, they're going to be instrumental as part of that telehealth program going forward.
Right. So you touched a little bit about some of the things that you have seen that could put you on a path towards, you know, having that issue down the road. So what are those things? Because you mentioned a little bit about dietary, you mentioned alcohol, you mentioned a few things. So can you go a little bit deeper on that?
Yeah. And again, and this is, you know, I'm learning through this process as well. I mean, the more that I'm engaging with people that do this for a living, they're going to sit there and say, hey, there's a lot that David can learn as well while he's doing this. But I think that you can take, for example, CTE. All right. So that is an example of, you talk about impact sports. So there's a great movie out, I don't know the year, but the movie called Concussion. Will Smith is in the movie, talked about football and head injuries and impact. Those are things that are that can exacerbate the conditions or facilitate things such as dementia. I had the alcohol intake. If there's been an abuse issue in the past that has not been resolved, things like that can also exacerbate and almost act like a catalyst to the onset of specific diseases with dementia. So I think it's not just the genetics piece. It's also, what are we doing to take care of our bodies? How are we managing certain things in the past that have happened to us that were beyond our control? Did we get them in front of the right health practitioners to minimize that overall impact and the right resolution within ourselves? Diet, alcohol, exercise, you know, again, head impact and injuries and things of that nature, sexual abuse. I mean, things that are very traumatic events actually do act as a catalyst to certain forms of dementia. So that's the type of stuff where if you get the right practitioner messaging that to the communities, hey, I was part of that. How can I help offset that? And that discussion is at least started with the people that are best suited to have that discussion.
Right. So how do you plan on, okay, so movie comes out. It's a phenomenal success. Everybody has their awareness heightened. Okay. So now they want to understand more. Where are you tying in that outreach to the movie? Like, let me understand. What, how do you plan on doing that?
So I think the first point of that is to actually put a demographic that is most impacted by the disease front and center on the film. Got so Sarah will be here to speak about this line, but I will tell you this. I know very little about a lot of different movies. I don't know very much at all. I haven't seen very many of them. However, when somebody said to me, "Do you ever see the dementia-themed movie?" The only one that I can drum up is The Notebook. Fantastic movie, fantastic storyline. If somebody is really good, they may throw out Still Alice. Fantastic movie, fantastic storyline, all wonderful stuff. All are spoken from one voice, one context. And so the most obvious thing for me is to say, if the fact is that minority communities are most impacted by the disease, then the very first thing that we would suggest is, and this is a credit to Brian and Sarah both, is to say, great, then feature the demographic visually that is most impacted by the disease. That's the first connecting piece to say, hey, there is a different voice and context to afford the population that's looking at this movie. That's the first step. The second step then is to reach out to different doctors are reaching out to me from the minority communities and saying, hey, I've got the gene. Both my parents died from it. I'm very well schooled in how to talk to this subject. I would love to be a part of that. Cool. There's a film festival in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I'd love to have that facilitated with the local community in Squirrel Hill in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Would you like to be part of that outreach? We've got 500 people we've invited to this particular event to speak to. So it goes like that. Memory care facilities based in Pittsburgh. We would love to have you guys come and speak on behalf of your particular part of how you're supporting dementia awareness in your community, or what you are seeing the local community that needs to be changed when it talks about legislation, community outreach, programs, funding. There's a lot of conversation that can happen, but simply starting with, let's focus on the demographic most impacted first, then let's have the conversations with memory care practitioners, doctors, researchers, pharma, telehealth, all saying, we all know that this is the most impacted community, yet nobody's done the outreach with it, nobody's focused on it in film. Let's do that.
Got it. All right, let's go to Sarah and Brian now to speak of that. Okay, so David kind of set the stage of how you're going to start. So now tell me what was running through your mind as far as, yes, we can't have it just told from one perspective, and we certainly need to make it so that it's, again, we speak about this a lot. You relate to people that look similar to you. It's just human. It's human. So if you are going to make an impact and tie it to the outreach that you are trying to get to, the people that are cast in, and I would assume, and the areas and all of that would have to wrap around that. So Sarah, tell me a little bit of how, what your thoughts are on that.
So it just, Brian and I have a film production company called Cardinal Flicks, and we have a whole bunch of social responsibility initiatives that range from women director program, from young producer program. For this specific film, we're also going to be having a dementia patient and caregiver initiative, where we're going to be using real artwork from patients. If it's safe to do so, we're going to have dementia patients and their caregivers on set as possible extras. And another, another form that Brian and I really believe in is just diversity and gender parity and all of that. So having a very diverse crew and cast is always something that we strive for. And so when I learned from David that the Black community specifically was twice as likely to have dementia, that really resonated with me. And just like what David said, all the films that most people know about Alzheimer's or dementia of some kind, a lot of those faces are white, and that's just what's out there. And they're great movies, and they do their job, but, there are other voices out there. And so, how do we all work together to tell everybody's story, to show the truth of what's going on? So we're, we're in terms of casting, we're keeping that in the forefront of our mind.
I love that. I think that's so powerful and so important, because you're right. There's a missing piece to that. And I think you guys are addressing that. And that's wonderful. All right. So Brian, I want your perspective adding on to what Sarah just said, because you're kind of the whole kit and caboodle from start to finish. So tell me, what are your thoughts in terms of making sure that this movie will resonate with the audience that you are absolutely trying to reach and make an impact?
Most of that's going to be on David and Sarah in terms of the creativity of the script and stuff, and then ultimately the shooting of the film. But I guess my part will come into play, once we get to the end of that process. And, what you can do with a film, everybody probably understands the basics of getting a film out. You put it into theaters and you put it on pay-per-view, and then you get it on subscription services like Netflix and Hulu. A film like this, you can do more than that. Our goal is to use the educational distribution services of that. There is a segment of the distribution industry that deals with education, where they'll have access to schools, both high schools and universities all over the United States, as well as the public library system. And ultimately, what we would like to do, in addition to the normal things that you do with a film, we want to be able to do private and public screenings of the film, both in theaters, as COVID allows, but also you can do this online. Nowadays, you can stream it online, and you can create events whereby you show the film to a particular group or organization. And then after the film is over and everyone watches the film, you then can have a chat about the topic. So you're setting up a screening of the film and then having a dialogue about the film and the important topics in there. And then clearly this one would be about dementia. And then having some people on the chat that are experts in the field that can kind of expound on the ideas that are in the film. And ultimately what you're trying to do there is show the film, show a great film, and then have a conversation about dementia following it, whether that's in a theater as part of a talkback or online as part of like a Zoom chat. It's where we want to take the film beyond the traditional distribution things that you think of with a film. And I think that's how you do the outreach. It's a step further. It's a lot of extra work, but that's important, right? That's important to really engage, not just have people see the film, then be able to talk about it afterwards. So I guess that's what I'm saying.
I love that. And I'm very glad that you shared that, because that really, you know, as we're speaking, that's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking to myself, it's more than a film. You know, the film obviously is to bring awareness and is to connect you and to make you feel, right? You want people to react and have that connection. But to truly make that next step outreach, I think that is such a valuable component to add to it, where sure, the regular film circuit and all of that, that's great and all that should be done. But this is bigger than that. And that's so important. I love that. I love that. Now, Sarah, you mentioned the artwork. I want to hear a little bit more about that, where, you know, what you're looking to do with that and where that comes in, because I also think that's powerful.
Sure. Yeah. We're still deciding where we want to shoot, the location that we want to shoot. We're kind of going between Buffalo, New York, which is my hometown, and Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, which I believe is David's hometown. Is that correct, David? Yeah. So
not far from that.
Yeah, kind of. So we definitely have a certain kind of aesthetic that we're going for, and whichever community we end up deciding that we would like to film in, we are going to go to the local communities there and to reach out to dementia caregivers and see if we can use some of the artwork that they create to put in our production design, basically, so that we can include them in that way, and that it's just they're part of it, and that their work is part of it. I think it's a really beautiful thing. And also, if COVID allows, to actually potentially have some extras on set who are dementia patients and caregivers. We've even talked about possibly some short interviews between patients and caregivers during the credits rolling, just to show these people. And so we have a lot of ideas on how to be inclusive and to interact with the community that's opening their arms to us.
Awesome. Okay, David. So obviously, first thing, we want everybody to get the book Before the Ashes Fall. So that's step one. Step two, how can people kind of see the progress of how this is coming along? And of course, we want to have you back once the movie is made. We certainly want to circle back again, but how can people learn more, be connected, and kind of watch the progress here?
Yeah, so that's a great question. I think first and foremost, Before the Ashes Fall, thefilm.com. That is the website. And so one of the things, and we just got this thing kicked off a couple weeks ago, but one of the things that we will do is to inform the people, hey, this is where we are in the stage of the process. This is where we are as far as the funding, where we are as far as the casting, all that stuff that goes into the film that that Brian spoke of. So Before the Ashes Fall, thefilm.com, that's the first place. The second place is very active on LinkedIn as well. So you can certainly reach out to me directly. I'm very good about answering as many emails that come in as possible. I love that. This is truly a community effort across the board. And so I started working again with researchers, practitioners, memory care, dementia, all the different groups that are out there. So LinkedIn, David Serafine, Sarah T. Schwab, and Brian Long, they can connect on that aspect as well. I think one of the key points, in addition to tracking the progress, is to make sure that people understand that this is a film collaborative sponsored film. And what does that mean? Corporate social responsibility is a big term that's thrown around out there. But from that standpoint, that means that individuals can donate to the production of this film and give back to the very communities we are trying to invest this outreach within. They can do that as a tax-deductible give. So that is a very important point to call out as we move forward. Of course, there's an investment opportunity as well for those folks that are interested. But all of that is also detailed on the website as far as, hey, this is how your donations would give back and the various goals that we have for the outfit. So wonderful. That's the spot, the website and LinkedIn for sure.
Awesome. Wonderful. Well, guys, this has been fantastic. Thank you so much for coming on today and sharing all of this with us. We know that's going to be a huge success. And even more importantly, you're going to make a difference in the world. And that is very, very special. And that's what we strive to do every day. So thank you so much for joining me. Everyone, get the book, pay attention, go on the website, connect on LinkedIn, and let's support this fantastic mission. Thank you, everyone.
Much.
Thank you, Laura.
Thank you, Laura.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of Positively Charged Biz. I'm Laura Brandeo, and we are here to motivate, inspire, and support our listeners as they write their life stories. If you have an inspiring story, please email me at laura@positivelycharged.biz. And remember to subscribe to hear more great guests. And connect to us on Facebook at Positively Charged and Instagram at Positively Charged Podcast. Until next time, we wish you a positive day.